Good morning. Today I'd like to share what we're learning about designing a family-based intervention in South Africa. And we're calling this intervention the Our Family, Our Future program. The program is adapted from a CDC best evidence intervention designed by Dr. Diorio called the Keeping It Real program. And our intervention targets families with adolescents who are 13 to 15 because this is the age when adolescents are thinking of or engaging in sexual debut in South Africa. So I'd like to begin by providing a little bit of context as to why we're deciding to test and design and develop this intervention in South Africa. South Africa has the largest country epidemic with 6.3 million children and adults infected with HIV. And as we all know, adolescents and young people account for a lion's share of new infections every year. So latest statistics show around 42% every year. And in the South African communities where we work, antenatal prevalence is especially high, over 30%. Despite this community context of high HIV, adolescents in our preliminary studies said that they had very little chance or no chance of getting HIV. And even more concerning is that adolescents reported risky sexual behaviors. Over 63% reported using condoms inconsistently. Over 30% reported engaging in sex with casual or age-disparate partners or while using alcohol and drugs, and 14% engaged in transactional sex. However, our Team South African research also found that certain subsets of adolescents are particularly at risk. For example, in the meta-analysis shown here by colleague Operario, they identified a twofold greater odds of HIV infection among orphan children compared to their peers. And our study team also documented greater risk for transactional sex among orphan and other HIV-affected children. So we found a 1.5 greater odds of transactional sex among orphan and HIV-affected children when their caregivers were sick with AIDS, when there were reports of household poverty and past history of abuse. And finally, we found that adolescents with poor mental health, especially externalizing disorders such as trauma or depression, were also at risk for engaging in risky sexual behaviors. The linkages between poor mental health and risky sex have been documented elsewhere, including South African studies by Smith, Njuna, and Jama. And I think we're still learning about the mechanisms of these linkages, but they might have to do with poor risk perception, maladaptive emotion dysregulation strategies such as numbing and dissociation, as well as lower self-efficacy in negotiating safe sex. What the literature also tells us is that there are some important family mediators for preventing adolescent sexual risk behaviors. These include, for example, parental monitoring, parental attitudes about sex, parent-child communication about sex, and family functioning. And in this systematic review shown here by colleague Abby Harrison, they looked at all of the adolescent HIV prevention studies going on in South Africa. And there are a large number. A lot of them are community-based, many of them are school-based. But what Dr. Harrison found was that very few, at the time of this review, no family-based interventions were designed and tested for adolescents. Right now, there are a couple of family-based intervention programs going on, but they target adolescents, certain subsets of adolescents. So, for example, those children living with HIV-positive parents, or they target different outcomes. For example, co-occurring substance use and HIV risk. So we decided to focus on an existing family-based HIV intervention that showed large effects in Johnson's meta-analysis, also shown here. And that was Dr. Diorio's Keeping It Real intervention. So what does the original Keeping It Real intervention look like? You can see the different core components here. The intervention is focused on delaying sexual initiation or for adolescents who are not yet sexually active, for adolescents who are already sexually active, focusing on increasing condom use among them. The central premise of her intervention is that we really need to involve parents and families in HIV prevention, teaching, messages, and behavioral practice, and that parents are the ones that are best positioned to tailor these messages and skills for their particular adolescent. So our study consisted of a three-step intervention development process, and today I'd just like to share findings from the adaptation phase. This is where we gather qualitative data from adolescents and parents in 8 focus groups, and we also conducted 25 key informant interviews. We gathered data from 2 clinics, including one that serves HIV-positive adolescents and an NGO that works in the community in Khayelitsha. And Khayelitsha is a township right outside of Cape Town, one of the largest cities in South Africa, and it has rates of antenatal prevalence that are over 30% and extreme poverty. So, for example, latest statistics show that 75% of households earn less than $320 a month. So our adaptation process really focused on retaining the core elements of the Keeping It Real program, so the fidelity issues, but trying to address issues of fit. So, for example, how do we accommodate the beliefs and attitudes and behaviors in the target population that might ensure a better fit? How do we think about things that might affect response, entry, participation, and retention in the program? And what we found in our qualitative sample was that families were largely poor, less than a fifth of parents were employed, and none had completed high school. So what did we find? We identified content in the original intervention that needed adaptation. For example, we confirmed that there was excellent knowledge of HIV. That's not surprising. You see HIV messaging everywhere. But we did uncover a unique set of beliefs regarding the origins, transmission, and prevention of HIV. For example, in regards to origin, there were beliefs about the animalistic origins of HIV, including the fact that HIV might have come from pigs, lions, or baboons. And reflecting perhaps South Africa's recent challenges with xenophobia, participants described HIV as originating outside of South Africa with foreigners with malicious intent. Let me read an illustrative quote on your left. Some say it was a disease that was brought by the foreigners. They say that AIDS is a fatal disease and it is the nation killer. They say it came with the clinic situated in Khayelitsha. They say the disease came with the Romans, as it is said that all people with deadly diseases are sent by Rome. Participants also described a set of beliefs around HIV transmission. For example, that HIV could not be transmitted through the anus or when women were menstruating. And while the majority of participants were able to correctly identify the main methods for prevention, they also argued that certain subsets of people, for example, older men and adolescents having sex for the first time, would be unwilling to use condoms. We also heard words for sexual relationships, which you can see up here in the table. And many of these terms for relationships were kind of described risky sexual relationships, but there was one positive term that people used called a pie. And a pie was kind of a healthy relationship term for a cherished partner. So we're integrating this into our intervention by having adolescents and families talk about ingredients of a pie as a metaphor for describing caring relationships and caring actions. And I think that this is especially important given the imbalanced gender relationships that we found among adolescents. In our second theme, we identified some important context-specific motivations for adolescent risky sexual behavior. On the left, you can see that children describe parents forcing them to, perhaps, or encouraging them to engage in sex. In the middle quote, we heard repeatedly the context of transactional sex that occurred, particularly in age-disparate relationships with sugar daddies and sugar mommies. Those were terms used by the participants. And we also heard about HIV, quote-unquote, HIV fatigue, which you see in the quote on your right. So let me read this illustrative quote. HIV might be on the last list of your worries. Yeah, I could get raped tomorrow, or I could be stabbed tomorrow. I may not finish school. I may not get a job. I may not eat. All these kinds of things might be a lot more immediate. Even pregnancy is a lot more immediate. So participants suggested that our entry into the intervention has to move away from the HIV focus and focus rather more on empowerment and future orientation. We also identified new content about HIV risk that needs to be added into the intervention. So, for example, participants highlighted some of the unique risks that adolescents face as they try to make healthy sexual decisions. Adolescents have easy access to alcohol and drugs, and we also are newly discovering the dynamics of gang violence among this age group in Khayelitsha. And as one gang expert told us on your right, the more violent you are, the more sex you get. The more you can access sex through being violent easily because you're the gang leader. You've got that identity. You've got that strong oomph. And then you're very desirable if you're the leader and if you're at the front, if you're the most risky in fighting. The most risky in fighting equals the most risky in sexual activity. In our fourth theme, we identified aspects of the intervention that needed enhancement. So, for example, participants described how discussions about sex and menstruation were taboo, especially among family members. A child asking about sex was seen as disrespectful, and a parent discussing sex would often be seen as encouraging sex to occur. So let me read an illustrative quote. "The cultural norms and standards do not allow talking about sex, especially among the Black people. We don't want to speak about children about sexual activities because we have the belief that once we do, that we encourage them to become sexually active. Because children, once you tell them something, they want to explore it and have the experience of it. So we're not allowed to talk to them. At a certain stage, once they actually show the symptoms that they're sexually active and that they have relationships, that's when we start to do the talking." I want to end with some of the solution-based approaches that families shared with us. Families suggested that our intervention needs to emphasize future orientation on how to engage families and adolescents in developing a plan that focuses on adolescents' future hopes and dreams. So let me read what somebody suggested, what an expert told us. "The other thing is that I believe that there's a sense where if one is hopeless, regardless of how much information they have on something, it doesn't help where they're going. If there's hope, that helps them try their hardest to live a positive life, and even to avoid situations that could put them at risk. I found just having hope to be one thing that stands out to me as a thing that could make the difference between an adolescent staying out of it or being in it." And what families also described to us was very specific cultural concepts of resilience, which I show here. And you can see the Isi Khoisa words for these terms of resilience in blue. And they really describe concepts about mutual care, social support, generosity, unity, and acceptance. And we tried to incorporate that into our new intervention design. So let me close with a few thoughts. First is that our adaptation process revealed areas of the original intervention, keeping it real, that needed to be altered or enhanced. So these included specific beliefs about origins, transmission, and prevention, ideas about family communication, discipline, and parenting, and also, of course, the fact that many adolescents and parents are already living with HIV. Our adaptation process also revealed new content that needed to be added, most strikingly around gang violence and disparate gender relationships, mental health, and an entry point that is less about HIV because of HIV fatigue and more about hope, future orientation, and resilience. And in terms of retention and engagement, parents talked about the need for fewer but longer sessions and more interactive and visual content to account for low literacy and integrating more debate to kind of try to work out which of these beliefs are real and not real. So our future steps right now is that we're developing a draft manual and training paraprofessionals, and next year we'll roll out a randomized pilot with 124 family dyads. So I'd like to end with thanking my collaborators and also a generous funding from NIMH. Thank you.